This is your captain speaking to you from the wheelhouse. I'd like to welcome all of you aboard the DL Weekly Podcast. For safe passage on our trip, please do not sit or climb on the outside railings. And be sure to watch your children. The water can be unpredictable in these parts, and we'd sure hate to lose any of you.
Well, hello, Weekly Tears. We are coming to you from the Tongaroa Terrace this time around. We've got Rosita in the background. It's nighttime, so all the tiki torches are going. So we're in a nice warm glow. I'm having a hard time because we're sitting right next to the Dole Whip, but I didn't have a chance to grab a Dole Whip before we started recording. I'm thinking it's probably going to have to happen once we're done. It'll be like my treat after we're done.
We also, just so you're aware, depending on how long we record, which is probably going to happen, the fireworks should start going off in about a little over a half an hour from now. So just to give you an idea of the time. But it's been a pretty good trip so far. So the first thing we did that we want to talk about is Walt's Barn. So Walt's Barn is only open on the third Sunday of each month. And we didn't really necessarily know that. It seems like a really popular place for people to want to go hang out, Disney fans to go hang out.
Oh, it's really neat.
And people that are really involved with the company or have been involved in the company also like to get involved with it. So the barn itself is located at Griffith Park near the, there's a railroad museum, and there's the, it's actually part of the LA Live Steamers who run the property. And it's a really, really awesome venue to do stuff.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, this is Walt's actual barn that he had constructed that lived at his Carrollwood property. So this was the barn that he used for his personal steam train collection. So the thing that's really cool is it's the barn itself, but then also as you walk through it, the barn structure serves as like a miniature museum. So there's a ton of stuff inside of this barn that Walt's either used daily
built.
Or built with his own hands, or like there's all sorts of, it's a beautiful dedication to Walt the man outside of just Walt's, you know, Walt Disney as in what he did with the company. It's really cool. It's because it's all about
it's a
his
personal
hobbies.
Thing.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
very personal. So it's incredible. I mean, we got to see stuff like the shaving kit that he had out there that he used because he'd spend so much time out there that there was actually a little bathroom installed in his barn so he wouldn't have to go into the house if he didn't need to. He'd get ready there in the morning. There was like the little sink and like the paper towel thing, the Dixie cup dispenser.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, incredible.
Yeah, it's a really neat like little space there. They actually have a set of his shaving kit and stuff there, which was really neat. There's some cool stuff there, like benches and stuff that he constructed himself.
Yeah, all of like the benches and the work benches that are there were constructed by Walt.
Yeah. In fact, the sign says all of the work benches in the barn were hand-built by Walt Disney, which is super cool. They had some like toy trains and stuff. They had some different taken apart locomotives to kind of show the smaller scale stuff that he had like in his yard at the Carrollwood Estate. Something that I did not know that I learned at this place was after Lillian passed in 1997, the family sold the property and it was redeveloped with a 20,000 square foot mansion. So almost nothing that was there from Walt and Lillian's 50-year period of owning it is there except for one of the train tunnel openings, the entry gate, and the barn, which they moved to this new location, which is kind of sad.
It is sad, but I mean that's how it goes, right? So the other thing too that's cool, there's some Disneyland history that's located at the barn, which we'll get into that in a little bit. I'm sure Tag wants to talk about that because he was really excited about this. But there's also pieces in there from other people that were important to the Disney company, like Ole Johnston, who was one of Walt's nine old men, was also a train enthusiast. Harper Goff was also a train enthusiast. So there was little nuggets and little pieces from them as well. So like, for example, Ole Johnston's toolbox is there from when he worked on trains. One of his train sets was there too. We got to see that was outside of the barn further down the property. And you could see that working and moving along. It's just incredible. Really, really cool.
Yeah, there's just a ton of history in this one little spot. And one of the interesting facts that they told us of the barn is that Walt was trying to build this barn off of the barn that he had in Marceline.
Yep.
To the fact that even the doorways and the beams even when the barn was brand new, were bent, like you would see after sitting
like
there for a long
sagging.
Time. Yeah, and so he wanted it to be reminiscent of what he remembers as a child, and not just a barn that looks like it. He wanted, like, you know, well, attention to detail, wanted to make sure the theming was correct for his childhood, so it was really amazing.
So for those of you that have been to the barn in Marceline, Walt's train barn, I'm going to call it right now, is different, or the Walt's Carrollwood barn is different. So there's it's not vaulted ceilings like the one in Marceline, but it looks very similar, but it's just, it's a smaller scale than what the other one is. But it was really interesting. We were talking with, I was actually wearing my Marceline, Missouri sweatshirt when we were there.
Lots of comments on that.
So we were chatting with one of the volunteers, and so we were talking about it while we were waiting to get in the barn, because it is smaller, so they can only allow so many people inside the space at a time. So we were chatting while we were waiting to go in, and kind of talking about the differences and showing her photos, because she had never been to the Marceline barn, whereas we had never been to Walt's barn. So it was very exciting, but super, super cool. The other thing too I'm going to talk about real quick before we transition out of Walt's stuff was they had Walt's workbench, like, preserved and in there, and there was all sorts of different tools and pieces that he used, different handbooks, different manuals, all sorts of things. There was even a little Walt name badge in there. It was incredible. It's very special. I feel like there's a lot of places that celebrate Walt Disney, the company. There's fewer places, though, far fewer places that celebrate Walt the man. One being, of course, Marceline, Missouri.
Yep.
But Walt's barn.
And the family museum.
The Walt's barn had it was way more Walt's history stuff than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was kind of just the barn and maybe a couple of things, but oh no, there was a lot in there, so that was really impressive.
I thought so too. I thought it was just going to be the barn.
Yeah, and then of course the Walt Disney Family Museum. So those are like the three very specific to Walt places, and this was way more than I expected. I didn't really know what to expect, but this exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. So as Teresa alluded to a little bit earlier, talking about Disneyland-specific stuff that's in there that I thought was cool, was they had a model of the Mine Train through Nature's Wonderland. And I've seen video clips and I've seen, like, photos, but I never understood how it, like, was laid out. Mm-hmm. And they had this model there with, of course, a model railroad going through the same track that the Nature's Wonderland trail would take. But they also had the pack mule trail that you could follow along with. And, man, this was quite the complex.
It was really cool.
I did not realize that in a lot of the photos you've seen or those video clips you've seen, there's kind of the desert wilderness of the rocks kind of spinning around and kind of a desert motif. Of course, there was the loading area, which has a lot of the buildings kind of like Big Thunder Mountain Railroad have now, you know, like the town. And then, of course, there was the section that still exists to this day that's bordering the Rivers of America, where the waterfall is, and there's still that tunnel that you can see as you come into Frontierland from Galaxy's Edge, or if you're going into Galaxy's Edge from Frontierland. And there's a whole little section in there that I didn't even know existed, and I was able to follow the pack mule path. It's cool.
I was really cool. So
happy to see this. I have never seen this laid out. I didn't know how it was laid out. The other thing that was related to Disneyland was they had the combine car, one of the combine cars from the opening day of Disneyland there.
Yeah, one of the original trains that was on the track here at Disneyland.
Yeah. So the reason it's called a combine car is it was a combination of passenger and cargo. Mm-hmm. So this was definitely there on the opening day, and the society there has painstakingly restored this, and it looks gorgeous. But not only that, but right next to it, there was all types of cool stuff in there. There was some paper drawings of a sketch of the original Disneyland layout.
It's like the most crude sketch I've seen of the Disneyland layout. It was from 1953, and it was the park site plan. This was a reproduction. It wasn't the original that they had hanging there. Yeah, it was dated 8/8 of 1953 when this was sketched out. But it's very, very crude. It's not like the one where you see the castle and you kind of get to picture what it is. Oh no, this is kind of almost like blueprints of the layout of the space a little bit, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
And what's interesting is when you look at it, it's laid out with what's there when they bought it. So, for instance, they have some square spots that say houses.
Yeah.
So, where the houses were. They have a section that says citrus groves. They have a section in the corner that says the
total
potato
area.
Patch.
Yeah.
They have a eucalyptus thing. They have some avocados that were grown there. So, it's just interesting to kind of see how this was then drawn over it is kind of the rough outline of it. I don't know. I've never seen this before, and so I was really fascinated by it. And then, of course, you know, there was, like, elevation drawings of the train stations for Disneyland that was there, some photos of Walt on the train, and a ton of train-related stuff. Disneyland, Railroad, Santa Fe and Disneyland Railroad, ticket books, just a lot of memorabilia related to the train.
That's right. There was a full ticket book in there as well. Then further along, there was a section of things from Bob Gurr. So they talked, because, right, it's train-related was kind of what the thing was with this. So they transition from the Disneyland Railroad to then the Disneyland Monorail. So there's a section of stuff, sketches and such, that was from Bob Gurr from when he was designing the monorail. There's photos of a young Bob Gurr with the original monorail, so it was very, very cool. And then last but not least, this one I got a kick out of because we have a listener, Ace, who used to work on this attraction, and he was on the podcast. We'll have to look up when it was. It was a while back, and he talked about his time when he was a cast member here, but he worked on the Storybook Land train, the Casey Jr. train that goes through Storybook Land, and he was trying to explain how the cast member would sit in the engine and drive the train. Well, they actually had sketches, because again, train related, that was the theme of this kind of museum was trains. So they had sketches of the Casey Jr. train, and it had a sketch, and it showed exactly how, you know, kind of like a slice, so you could see inside how the engineer, the conductor, or the cast member sits down in the train, which I thought was really, really fun and really interesting. Incredible, though.
Episode 109 and 110 were the two episodes with Ace. So if you're interested in that, I was able to look those up really quick.
So after we finished doing kind of the museum-y things, we decided there's a little train. I don't know what the scale was of the train, but anyways, there's a tiny train that the LA Steamers run, and it's an attraction. You can actually get on it and you can ride it. So we were watching, and it circles the barn property and beyond, as we learned. But we decided we wanted to go ride the little train. So we had to do so. You had to leave the barn area, walk up the street a little bit, and then enter from the other side. So we went over to do that, which was amazing. First of all, it was, like, I think it was a suggested $4 donation per person to ride the train.
Totally worth it.
Which, that just goes back into the LA Steamers Club, so they can have the insurance to be able to offer the rides and, you know, all the...
Maintain everything.
And all that, you know, all that fun stuff. But that, I mean, we should try and... It was probably a 10-minute ride.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was way more than we thought.
Well, it looked like it was going to loop around once, and then it looped around twice. And then the second time it looped around, it went way off in the area that we didn't even know existed on the property.
So it was kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. So we left the station, went towards where the barn was, looped around the barn, came back to the station, looped around a different way down by the barn. But then instead of going back to the station, we shot past the station, and there was this whole themed area. Well, the whole thing was themed, but there was this whole big area behind the station that we didn't even know existed. That had all these really cool bridges, there was tunnels, there was all these miniaturized, like, set pieces, kind of think like Storybook Land canal boats. So there's all these little mini houses and billboards and all sorts of things and cool stuff to look at, which all were done by club members. They all built all this stuff themselves, and it's just, we were blown away, absolutely blown away.
It was super cool. We did run into a weekly tier there.
We did.
Who was actually volunteering there. Finn.
Yeah.
We got his permission.
Shout out to Finn.
Yeah. He was really helpful. Now, Teresa left us out in the storytelling, but I do think we want to talk about it quick. We were walking, so because of reasons that are too complicated and not interesting to get into, to ride the train, you actually had to leave the Walt's Barn area and walk down the street. Well, anyway, as we're walking down the street, we see this really cool-looking old car coming. Turns out it was a steam-powered car, which is really amazing. Mm-hmm. And as
none other driving it was
Jay Leno.
It was ridiculous.
From previously from the Tonight Show. So he actually pulled into the Steam thing, so we, of course, backtracked. And we found out that he actually brings it there as a fan of the club and was, filling up his water or something like that?
No, I think he just stops by to hang out, I think is what it was.
So he did. He hung out for a little bit. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to get that close to him.
Yeah, we didn't say hi to him. But when we were... So we saw him as we were walking to get on the steam train, driving his car by, yeah. Which this car is
amazing.
Huge, first huge. Of all. Like, he looks like a tiny little person in this car. I mean... just a very giant car. It's like a boat of a car.
Huge, yeah.
We saw him drive past in it. And then as we were on the train, he was parked in the like back parking area where the steamer club members park and hanging out with them there. So as we went by him on the train as well. So it was pretty surreal. Only in Southern California. Only in California, right?
What a cool vehicle, too. Like, it's just so amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, we would also be remiss if we did not mention... So after we rode it, this ended up being kind of a who's who. We had, of course, Santa Claus was there, but I want to say that Santa was probably one of the least sought-after folks of this group because of all the Disney fans,
for us,
of course.
Yeah, for us. For us, the Disney fans. There was tons of kids that were at this event as well. Yeah.
So Bob Gurr was there. Tanya McKnight Norris, who we met in Marceline, was there. Mm-hmm. Don Hahn was there signing books. There was
Dave Bosser
was there.
Tom Morris, who is a former Disney Imagineer.
Floyd Norman was there.
And Bill Farmer also showed up. And some of these people were there signing either because they had books that had just come out or just, you know, signing autographs.
Tanya was just volunteering.
Yeah, Tanya's a volunteer at the barn. But a number of them, Bob, Tom, and Bill Farmer, all just wanted to come hang out and, you know, just be around it. It's just, like I said, it's just a really cool, really magical area. Oh, and also, Rick Law was there. We can't forget
yes,
our friend
course.
Rick Law. Oh, and Terry Harden was also there. So it was really fun for us to be able to connect and see, especially people that have been on the podcast before.
Yes.
We got to chat with Tanya again after we got to spend some quality time with her and Marceline. So that was really fun to see her and catch up real quickly. But it was just... incredible. I need to give a shout out right now to our friend and listener, Weekly Tier Dave V. He inspired me, and this just happened to be the perfect day. It just happened. It wasn't like I necessarily planned it, but it just coincidentally ended up being the perfect day for me to start my own, I'm going to call it my adult autograph book, because I don't really know what else to call it. But Dave has this incredible book that he has been taking with him to different events for years and has gathered some really amazing and incredible people's signatures, some of whom are not with us anymore. So this is a very special, very amazing, just it's history and really amazing book. So I thought, you know, we've been going to all these things. Why haven't I done something like that? Well, I decided this trip, you know what? We're going to start. No time like now to start. So I started. Coincidentally, I just happened to get... But the first... This is, like, mind-boggling to me. The first three autographs in my new Disneyland Disney autograph book are all Disney legends, which, like, come on, pinch me. Like... how amazing.
You picked a good day to bring it, that's for sure.
I did. And I didn't even get every single person that was there's autograph.
Correct. But they were all very gracious to sign that. You didn't have to wear the book or anything. We did buy some stuff there for sure. I got a cool poster that I actually had Bob Gurr sign. So I got one signature, Teresa got a bunch of other signatures.
It was amazing.
Don Hahn drew like a caricature of himself as his signature.
It was so fun.
And that was amazing.
Floyd Norman and Rick Law both drew little Mickey Mouse sketches in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
How cool.
Very amazing. So yes, that was our time. It's kind of a condensed what we did at Walt's Barn. I want to say we were there for probably
a couple
3 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours.
Before we were at the barn, we decided, you know, why not? When in Rome kind of thing. We drove up and just drove past the observatory at Griffith Park because my parents were with. That's something that they had never seen. So we thought, you know what? We're right here. We got to the barn 30 minutes before it opened, so we had time to go. So we went and did that. And then since we had the car rented, and we wrapped up the things at the barn around 2 p.m., and we had the car, we're like, well, why not go explore some more? So we actually did take a little trip over to the Walt Disney Studios, which I didn't realize is kind of Not really. But it feels like it's across the street from Griffith Park. It's really not far.
It's close, yeah.
It's very close. So we went over and showed them the studios. Of course, we didn't go in. We just got to peek in through the gates. But they had never seen the, like, Frank Wells building or the Royal Disney, the animation building, or the Michael Eisner building with the seven dwarves holding up the roof. So they thought that was really, really cool.
Got to see Dopey in the Santa hat.
We did.
We left there and we decided again, because we had time, that we wanted to go. We asked Teresa's parents, because we had been there during COVID times, if they were interested in going over and checking out where Walt's final resting place was at Forest Park Cemetery. But what's interesting is there is a Forest Lawn. There's a Forest Lawn right near the train place and right near the studio. That's not the Forest Lawn where Walt is. There's another one that's further away, and that's where he is. And he has a nice little area there. And we were, timing just happened to work out where it was just a couple days after what would have been his birthday. So a lot of people had gone there and left flowers and different tokens of appreciation.
Yeah, so yeah, there was a lot of stuff. So a lot of people had gone recently and paid their respects. So yeah, Walt's birthday was December 6th, and the anniversary of his passing was on December 15th.
Yeah, so it was right after his passing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was very special. So we got to go. It was kind of almost a bit of a full circle Walt day. We got to see like Walt's life, Walt's career, and then, you know, Walt's final resting place. So my parents thought it was amazing. Like, the both of them have been just going on and on about how cool that was, because they haven't gotten to do much Disney outside of the park.
Yeah.
So they haven't done the kind of, I don't want to call it peek behind the curtain, but kind of the more, like, the more diehard fan
less
stuff.
Less touristy.
Yeah, so they thought it was, they were just like in awe. It was fun sitting there kind of pointing people out and explaining like who Bob Gurr was to them, mm-hmm. or who Floyd Norman is, and oh, that's the voice of Goofy right there.
Right.
Bill Farmer, you know, so yeah. And they were sitting there actually, and Bill was talking to somebody else, but my parents were sitting near where they were, and he flipped into the Goofy voice, so they got to even like experience that. So I thought that was really cool. So they really enjoyed themselves.
Yeah, your dad's pretty good at, like, he knows a lot of people just in his life in general. It was fun to see his surprise at some of the people that were there.
Yeah.
Like, when Bill Farmer showed up, I was like, that's the voice of Goofy. And he just looked very surprised.
What? Yeah.
So after that, we returned our rental car, and we went over to do our public hangout, or our supporter hangout, and our public live stream, where we walked around the Disneyland Hotel and looked at some of the Christmas decorations at each of the different towers. We walked by Santa Claus. So they did a really great job over there at the Disneyland Hotel, and that was a lot of fun. After that, we went to the Tortilla Joe's Taqueria.
Yes.
And had some food there. I had the two taco special with street corn, which I'm kind of obsessed now with the street corn. I thought it was really tasty. I was kind of... Don't be turned away by the fact of how they present it to you. So it basically was just like a thing of corn, which they put a giant dollop of just mayo on it. And I was like, well, that seems weird. And then a little bit of the cheese and then some seasoning. And I thought, that just doesn't seem quite right. But that's how you make it.
It's exactly what street corn is. But I've never... That's the first time I've seen it...
Put together?
No, but that's the first time I've seen it not on the cob.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks... You know what? I didn't even try a bite. We're going to have to maybe go get another one so I can try it.
The,
it looks really good, though.
The tacos I had were super full. Meat was very, very good. Teresa had the nachos.
Oh my gosh, the carne asada there. Ooh.
Carne asada was very good.
Very, very good.
Talk about your nachos.
I got the nachos. Don't be a fool like I was and not pay attention to the sign. Because they're like, oh, do you want this on there? Do you want that on there? I'm like, oh yeah, sure, that sounds great. That sounds great. Well, then I didn't realize that, oh.
Upcharge.
Yep. So my nachos are a little more expensive.
Teresa's like, how did this get to be $18?
Like, it says the nachos are $10. But yeah. It was like an additional $2 for the nacho cheese.
Yep.
Which I wouldn't have thought. And then it was like an additional $1 for sour cream. And then I got an horchata. But it was delicious.
Magic happened. You know, we sat there. And, of course, the snow was happening in Downtown Disney, which was really awesome. So we really enjoyed kind of sitting there and see that. Man, they pumped the snow in Downtown Disney.
And it was a while, too. It was but probably solid, like, 3 minutes or something.
Something like that. It was quite a while, and it was just a ton of snow. We went walking through Downtown Disney, And we stopped over at Marceline Confectionery because they had a full house of people in the window doing stuff. And we watched a couple new cast members get trained on how to make some of the things. So it was kind of fun looking at, they had kind of like a instruction sheet that they were kind of going over and like doing the decorations. And I don't know, there was something kind of mesmerizing watching them do it. And Teresa and I were commenting to each other that the lady who was doing the training, she had drawn the used chocolate to draw these like string lights. They're supposed to look like Christmas lights on these candy apples. And then she stuck like the little M&Ms on there and like turned it over, and the M&M didn't slide off or move or anything. And I turned to Teresa and I said, if that was one of us, that thing would fall on the floor, it would slide down the thing, but somehow it's not happening.
Disney magic is what it is.
Oh, and Teresa got a video of seeing how they put the handle into the candy apple.
Yeah, the stick. How they get the stick in the apple. It was
they
really
have a little
fun
contraption.
Yeah, a little. There's a device specific for it, and it was like, it looked like it was pretty effortless to do.
But yeah.
It was really fun watching them shoot the little cardboard sticks.
There's a device that does it.
Yeah, of course. It was cool. Extra Disney magic. After that, we headed on over to the Grand Californian to go check out their Christmas and holiday decor. And I feel like a trip to Disneyland for the holidays is not complete without stopping to check out the gingerbread display at the Grand Californian. So for this year, it was a gingerbread house of the Grand Californian Hotel itself. Chip and Dale were in the front decorating a little Christmas tree, and there was, I've never had a thing. So whenever they do these displays, they always put hidden Mickeys in there, so you can kind of sit there and look for all the hidden Mickeys.
Well, was there like five or something on the last one?
Yeah, there's like five, seven, something like that. Never more than 10, I feel. Oh no, for this gingerbread house, 25. There were 25.
And hard.
Hidden Mickeys on this gingerbread house, and it was difficult. We actually had, there was a couple other adults making laps as we were, and we kept getting stuck, so we did help each other because they spotted one or two that we hadn't spotted. And
I don't know if we would have spotted
one or two that they hadn't spotted, and they were so well hidden that without each other's help, I don't know if we would, how long it would have taken, but it was super fun.
I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you'll know what I'm talking about. There was a couple that I don't think I ever would have noticed because they were like on the side, and somebody had to like turn their flashlight on to see it. Like, it was crazy.
There was ones on the side, kind of in between the beams that were felt impossible to find. We found them.
I will say the last one that we found, I want to give Teresa credit because she was the one who thought about it. But also, I want to give us uncredit because it probably should have been one of the most obvious ones for us.
Well, there's so many different things going on the gingerbread house, so it makes finding the Mickeys more difficult because there's just so many different decorations and so much to look at. But man, it's so fun. That's going to become like that has become a new thing for us to go check out whatever the display is. So they have this for the Coco display too, to go find all the hidden Mickeys on the display. And both Tag and I, thankfully, were the same. When we find out that there's hidden Mickeys, we want to start looking for them. And we both have this thing that we're like, well, we can't leave until we find them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, neither could that of the other adults. They were trying to find
people. Even if we had to give up and like ask Google or ask the internet for help because there wasn't other people there that knew, we just have this like, we have to do it. We have to do it.
Just a heads up for you guys. We're a few minutes away from fireworks. So if you start hearing bangs in the background, what it is.
I'm curious to see what the sound's like over here. We're hoping it won't be too
They were very loud at the hotel last night. So I assume that since we're still in the park, it's going to be louder. But we'll see.
We will see. So today, as in Monday, the 18th was our first day in the park. So we arrived on Saturday night. Sunday was our rental car day that we did our little mini tour in Walt's Barn with. So yeah, today we started in DCA, which was a little backwards for us, but my family is also here, as we've alluded to and said already, but they were starting in DCA today, so we decided that we'd start in DCA too. Coincidentally, it just so happened that today was a candy cane day for DCA, so you all know how I feel about the candy cane, and you also know how Tag feels about the candy canes. But this was the smoothest candy cane.
I'll even agree to that.
Process ever. So we got to the parks we weren't even here like crazy early. I think we left the Hojo at 7.
We did.
Stopped at McDonald's because my family had stopped there for breakfast. Met up with them, continued on, got through security. Security wasn't crazy.
We didn't need breakfast at McDonald's, to be clear.
Yep. And we got in the line to get in. And I want to say we were like the third family from the gate back. Got
in. They started letting people in early.
Yeah, I think they started letting people in at about 7:25. I kid you not, it was 7:30, maybe 7:31 when I was already signed up and had my name on the list for candy canes. And if my phone would have been, I don't know why, but for some reason my phone did not alert me of the text message. I got my text message to go pick up my candy cane by 8:30.
Yeah.
They were really kind. I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't actually see the text message until like it was closer to 10. It was 10:30 and we were in the middle of the Soarin' queue when I finally saw the text come through. And it says, please return within 30 minutes of receiving this message. And I was like, oh no.
Right.
I looked at Tig. I'm like, I may have just missed my candy cane window. But we decided we'd go over because it doesn't hurt to ask. And we wanted to try the peppermint patties anyways, which we'll get to that. So I went over. She didn't even ask me what my return window was. She just asked, oh, what was your name? And she just, you know, checked me off the list. My guess is they probably have the please return within 30 minutes thing as a courtesy so people aren't grabbing their candy canes on the way out of the park at night. So they want you to get there sooner rather than later is my assumption. I don't actually know.
Plus, if you don't show back up, they might sell your candy cane because buy it beforehand.
Yeah, I'm sure at a certain point there's a cutoff that they go on to the next person, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, grabbed our candy canes, so that was really exciting.
Well, but you're way ahead. We skipped a whole bunch of morning stuff.
No. But that was the candy cane experience.
Sure.
Very smooth.
So we went right over, and I realized while we were waiting in line for a couple minutes that I was going to mobile order the breakfast that I wanted to have at Smoke Jumpers, because they offer breakfast now.
Yeah.
And Teresa's Cold Brew. And I found that they were already open. And park wasn't even open yet, so I was surprised. So we went over there and we picked up my mobile order. And the lady was like, yeah, you're like my second guest today. Since we started offering breakfast, it's open early. So
that's
I was like,
awesome.
Oh, sweet. So I got the chorizo burrito, which I thought was pretty good. It wasn't like, I still think like the Toronto wrap or something is better. But it was a solid burrito for sure. The fries were pretty good. What did you think of your cold brew?
The cold brew that I got was called the breakfast cold brew. So it was a chocolate cold brew, toasted marshmallow foam, and cocoa crisp rice cereal. I was really looking forward to this because I like the more creamy kind of cold brews. And so this with, I think because it was toasted marshmallow, I was assuming it was going to be kind of creamy. It reminded me a lot of the cold brew Black Calf, which is back in Galaxy's Edge. But I actually like the cold brew Black Calf better. So the cold brew Black Calf is a little bit sweeter and a little bit more creamy than the breakfast cold brew was at Smoke Jumpers. Similar taste though. It was still kind of that like chocolatey, but it just had more of the coffee flavor, I guess.
Sure.
So if you like more coffee flavor, less sweet cold brews, this would be a great option for you. It wasn't like, it's not like I'd never get it again. It's not like a must-have every trip,
sure,
if that makes sense.
So we finished up that, and I went and got the churro. There was a Willy's churro. There was the almond churro.
It was pretty good.
It was, I don't know what I expected. It wasn't exactly what I expected. It kind of was, I expected more of an almond flavor, and there was still like a really heavy like cinnamon flavor.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my criticism that I'll have there. But then we went over to Cars Land because we were going to possibly get in line for Raiders Pinch Racers, but we were waiting for part of Teresa's family to show up. So we went on Luigi's,
which
was fun as always, and it was great because there was such a short wait. Luigi's is really fun, but a lot of times it seems too short to wait a longer time for it, so it was perfect. And of course, it was the Christmas version, which was a lot of fun.
Well, in the time that it took for us to meet up with my family, when we left Smoke Jumpers, Radiator Springs Racers was a 30-minute wait. And by the time we were about to get in line, it had jumped to a 120-minute wait. So we decided, you know what? We're going to go find some other stuff to do. So we went over to Pixar Pier, did Midway Mania, some rode the Incredicoaster. After that, we went over and had some fun on Goofy's Sky School. That's just such a crazy little roller coaster.
We haven't been on that in a while.
No, we hadn't. And then we went over and did The Little Mermaid, followed by Soarin'. And everything, except for Soarin', because then we did that a little bit later in it was like mid to late morning. Everything was basically a walk-on. Maybe it was a 15-minute wait at Goofy's Sky School. Maybe 15, probably closer to 10. Mm-hmm. Everything was really quick and was great. So you just got to knock that whole... We did knocked most of that corner of the park off. But yeah.
Yeah. We had a pretty good day at DCA going through all that stuff. So we kind of bummed around and did some... I don't know what we did after that. Because the next thing I got
is
your...
That's what we did.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what was that part of the day?
We picked up the candy cane and then...
Yeah, we picked up the candy cane and then Teresa got a really good food.
Went and had kind of an earlier lunch, so around like 11, 11:15, we went and got lunch. I went over to Award Wieners and grabbed one of their seasonal specials, the Holiday Beef Dip Sandwich, which... Holy cow. A, that thing was... That's shareable. That's 100% shareable.
It was huge.
I, like, was stuffed after eating half of the sandwich. But it was really good. Messy. Make sure you grab yourself a knife to cut it in half to be able to eat, because it was not happening. It was not happening for me to pick up the entire sandwich and try to eat it. But, man, the beef was very tender. There was avocado spread, or maybe it was guacamole on there. I was not expecting that. So it's creamy. The au jus, it is a jalapeno au jus, but I was telling Tag it really wasn't spicy. So if spice isn't your thing, this was not spicy. I was kind of surprised. I was expecting there to be a kick, somewhat of a kick, a little heat, and there wasn't. Tag would have been, I should have had you try a bite of it.
Yeah, that's right.
But he was looking forward to what he wanted for lunch, so I didn't want to ruin your appetite. But I would have been curious to see what you thought, because it really, really didn't have a kick.
Well, Teresa's parents wanted to go get something. They were in the mood for some type of Mexican food. And we were looking at the stuff in San Francisco because I was thinking that I wanted something from San Francisco. And I kind of looked at some of the photos and the description sounded really good. But then when I looked at the photos, I wasn't really kind of in the mood for any of that. So we actually ended up going over and getting one of the things that was on my list, which your parents also got, which was the tacos. I'm going to butcher this. I apologize. The gobernador, which was a chipotle marinated shrimp tacos with pepper jack cheese served with Spanish rice and refried beans. This was really good. Really good. It was a very slightly spicy, so not like, it didn't bother me at all. Like, I wasn't like, oh man, here
so
we go.
So just the pepper jack cheese kind of a spice level?
I think it was the chipotle marinated that was on top. But it was really good. While we were eating this, one of the Viva Navidad performances happened. One of the weekly tiers came over that works at the park, and we kind of hung out with him for a little bit. And we kind of hung around late enough to... Because the Viva Navidad that we were sitting there had some type of thing where it was delayed a little bit. So we actually ended up just hanging out in that area, and we saw the Viva Navidad...
The next showing.
The next one, which was great as always. Man, those performers. Mm-hmm. I gotta hand it to them. They're in, like all of them, yeah. Men, women, they're in boots that have heels, not like the guys weren't in like high heels, but like cowboy boot heels, and watching them like stomp around and do these dances, yeah. I was always impressed.
Yeah,
and it was
amazing.
A lot of fun.
Well, and the clothing too, they're in like full head to toe
yes.
costumes, which don't look, some of them do not look like the most breathable and the most comfortable to wear in this, you know, in the heat, plus they're dancing around, so yeah. And they're just so good. It was really fun this year because this is the third year now that we've been able to experience Viva Navidad. And we're seeing familiar faces from year to year, so it's the same performers returning season after season,
which
I think is so cool. Yeah, so it was really, really fun. It's such a good little street party.
Yeah.
And if you've never experienced it, they explain it as a street party, which basically is it's a parade that comes out, but then it parks. So instead of doing the performance along the parade route and it just kind of performs as it goes by, it parks in front of you and does the full performance in front, you know, right there in front of you. I want to say it's probably 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah,
10, 15 minute long performance. So it's not super short, but it's also not going to take over your day. But so fun.
It's a great... If you happen to be over there when it's happening and you're close to the start time, just watch it.
Yes.
It's a great, like, just a few minute thing.
Oh, I would go out of my way to go back there.
Well, yeah, of course.
So cool. So after we finished up with Viva Navidad, we were walking back towards the front of the park. We were talking about doing a couple different things, but as we were walking, we noticed that they were kind of using the magic tape, we'll call it, in front of the Little Mermaid, and that's where the toy drummer is placed. So we just stopped and asked the cast member, like, oh, when's the next performance? So, and it was like 10 minutes from then. Nobody was lined up. There was absolutely nobody standing and waiting, so we got front and center seats to the toy drum
show. This is a fun show.
It's so fun. I ended up recording, I think, basically the whole thing.
The personalities of the performers, amazing.
So if you've never gone, it's like a little drum line. There's four toy drummers, and they're drumming along, but they're toys that have escaped the toy box in it for whatever. So in the beginning, they're very, like, well put together, and they're doing exactly what they need to be doing, but slowly as the performance goes on, they get a little loose and a little goofy and having like extra fun with it, and then just when they're like loose and ready to go and like really feeling themselves, it's time for all the toys to report back to the toy box. But it's a ton of fun. If you ever get the chance, 100% highly recommend that you do that.
Yeah, so we walked over. We decided that we were going to go to the Animation Academy, but then we saw the red car trolley. We kind of weren't good at making decisions today, so we were just kind of like, let's do this, let's do that, which was fine, because it's the Disney wins, right? And so we went over to ride the red car trolley, but they said that Mickey's like Christmas cavalcade was coming, and so the red car trolley had stopped. We had just missed it, and we didn't want to draw Lightning McQueen that was there, so we decided to go over and ride Monsters, Inc., and we happened to run into Max, Goofy's son, and we did a quick little photo op with him. He was super fun, so we did that quickly and rode Monsters, Inc.
This is always a fun time.
Mm-hmm. And then we went and did the Animation Academy.
Mistakes were made.
So we went in, and it was drawing the new character from Wish.
Asha.
And we got in there, and Teresa knew this, of course, because she loves the Animation Academy, but I didn't know that there was, like, levels of drawing.
Usually they're marked on the little time board when they're a more advanced class.
So we get in, and she's like, this one, normally these things take about 15 minutes, maybe 20 at the very, very most. This one's going to take 20 to 30 minutes, and we're like, okay. And then
I can't remember what she called it to, what level of... I think she said it was like an expert level class or something. It was intense.
Well, we had Teresa's 6-year-old...
Oh, yes, my little nephew, yeah.
So this is a little much for him.
Yeah, it was... I wish they would have had it marked, because we would have not chosen to do that time slot with that character.
It was hard.
It was advanced. It was very well advanced. It was definitely expert level.
I don't think anybody kept their drawing except for me.
I think they did, because one of my other cousins...
No, I mean in our group.
Oh, who's 15? She did.
Oh, she did, okay.
Yep, and I think my cousin's wife, I think, she did as well, so...
But your mom didn't keep hers, you didn't keep yours.
No, yeah, I didn't keep mine. But... It was still fun, but you know what, though? Again, we went into this class. This is the magic of the Animation Academy. We went into this class, and my cousin's wife was like, oh, yeah. Like, she was excited about the experience, excited to do it with the kids, but she's like, stick figures are, like, that's about the level I am kind of thing. Hers turned out beautifully, like, and it was an expert-level class, so... Of course, were there things that she's like, oh, it was one of those, she said, like, I was doing great until it came to the face or the eyes, or I can't remember what the specific
thing was. That's where mine went down to.
I mean, everybody's, though, for it being an expert level class, I was really impressed with how the group had done. Same thing with my mom. She's not an artist either, so she was kind of hesitant going into the class, but hers looked really great. So I think if we would have timed it better and done a class that was more the typical Animation Academy level, everyone would have done amazing.
I also want to shout out to the cast member who was running that session. She was delightful.
We've had her before.
So we got
her. She's fun.
Done with the Animation Academy, and we went and watched Mostly Kosher, which we love.
Gosh, they're a hoot.
They were amazing as always. They have gone through... We today saw their third lead vocalist in the times we've seen them. So, and you thought he was the best of so far.
I think I've enjoyed his performance and his humor and his personality that he brought to it the most. He did an excellent job. Really, really fun.
And then we went over and watched Blue 13, which was a Bollywood act. And they had tons of energy and were a ton of fun. And I don't know how they do it without totally running out of energy, but it was great. They told the story of Diwali and explained kind of what that was, which I had never known anything about it. And so it was really cool to learn about that.
The same thing with Moshe Kosher. So the thing that's really awesome about these performances is not only is it, you know, some form of entertainment, Moshe Kosher is a band. So they've got, you know, singing and music.
Yeah.
Blue 13 is a dance company, so it's all sorts of fun dance that you get to watch them perform. But they talk about their culture's holiday and how they celebrate it and the meaning behind it and why it is what it is. So it's really cool. So it's fun and it's educational and informative.
Which Disney and Disney parks are great. Mm-hmm. So we went over after that and Teresa got another cold brew.
Of course I did.
This time at Pim Test Kitchen.
This one was special for the holidays. I think it's part of, well, no, I don't know if it's part of the regular holiday menu or the Festival of the Holidays menu. But either way, it's a seasonal cold brew over at Pim Test Kitchen. It is the Cold Brew Infusion Cinnamon and Spice. So it was a cinnamon caramel cold brew with cardamom cream foam. I really liked this. It also was topped with, what are those? Oh, Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal.
Yeah.
That's what it was topped with. It was very good. It was... For me, it had that creaminess that I like in the cold brews with the nice, exact right amount of sweet. Plus, I mean, who doesn't love Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal? So it was really fun eating those off the top. And they had a caramel drizzle on the top as well. Really,
so
really
if
good.
So the cold brew has cereal on, breakfast cereal
no,
on
no,
it,
no.
it's
the,
probably good.
The one from Smoke Jumpers had breakfast cereal on it too. So that's not always a telltale sign. But this one, I really enjoyed this one. I'm sad this one's seasonal because this one I would definitely... put on the rotation and get again, but very good.
So we crossed over to Disneyland and we happened to walk in right as they were going to light the Christmas tree, which they lit at 5 p.m. The amazing thing behind this was right after the Christmas tree lighting, the Christmas Fantasy Parade started, so we happened to be in a great spot to see both of these things, and we enjoyed watching both of them.
Yeah, and the parade was coming out, like the parade was leaving from Town Square, stepping off from Town Square, so... We got to see the lighting. I'm trying to figure out why nobody was... Like, we had, like, great, quote-unquote, seats for the parade and for the lighting. Like, I don't know how we lucked out. There was a section that was roped off exactly for people to go, to stand, to wait, to watch the lighting and the parade. And it was pretty empty in there. So we got really great spots for that. So it was Disney magic.
One of the cool things we noticed with Santa this year, and I don't know if he's done this in years past...
Yeah.
But he, you know, said Merry Christmas in a bunch of different languages, but also signed.
Yes.
Like American Sign Language.
He was he was singing along and signing, "We wish you a Merry Christmas."
Yeah, which was awesome.
Was really, really special.
After
really
that,
amazing.
I had mobile ordered the Jingle Julep thing that what they had
the
at...
Jingle Julep drink.
Drink.
At Bengal
was
Barbecue.
At Bengal Barbecue. And, of course, I ordered a couple of Bengal Barbecue skewers because, of course, she had to. This was amazing.
It was very good.
I thought it was great. Teresa thought that the amount of, what was it?
I was not
cookie
expecting,
butter.
Yeah, so this was a frozen white hot chocolate with like cookie butter syrup and a pretzel rod in it. I was expecting it to be like, for the cookie butter syrup, I was expecting it to be like a drizzle, maybe.
Oh, this was a lot.
It was coated. The inside of the cup was coated in the cookie butter.
Which I did not complain about at all.
Really, and it was like the same consistency of like a caramel sauce.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, but it didn't get hard with it being in the cold drink. It was delightful.
It was very,
it was really good.
Very
we might
good.
Have to get one of those tomorrow. Like I might have to get one for myself tomorrow during the day when it's warm outside. Be really refreshing.
It was wonderful. We went over to the Adventureland Treehouse because we had not done that at all yet. And for those of you who have not been on it, definitely go on it. It was very, very cool. The water wheel was working. It was great. Teresa made fun of me because I put my camera over the fence of Jane the ostrich because I was...
He couldn't handle. He couldn't figure out
how... I had to figure out how it worked.
He couldn't figure out how Jane the ostrich was present, and he just needed to know how...
And it's amazingly simple. That's all I will say. I won't spoil it for anybody. But I think your parents really enjoyed it too. Now, Teresa and I both kind of had a moment because there was a lot of people up in the tree, and it was moving a little bit more
swaying.
than we were expecting. And Teresa was like, "Don't talk about it. Let's keep going.
Let's just keep going through the tree."
But
let's
they did
not
an
focus.
Amazing job, and it was great
yeah.
to be up in the tree again, being able to look around and see the awesome view of Adventureland and looking into New Orleans Square and just being able to look at everything at that height again. Amazing. Just, I loved it. I'm so glad it's back. Amazing.
So after that, we decided to knock out a couple of rides here in Disneyland because the wait times were pretty low. I was checking the app.
It was drizzling, too, when we came over.
It hadn't been drizzling yet. So we were checking the app, and I noticed that Rise of the Resistance had, like, a 45-minute wait. And I was like, hey, that's not bad. Let's run back and do that. I think it only ended up being about 35 minutes for us to get on. And while we were standing in the queue, it did start to drizzle, which I think then made the park clear out a little bit earlier than normal. So, which then resulted in us being able to get on a couple other attractions pretty quickly. We walked onto Pirates. We basically walked onto Smuggler's Run as well. So we were able to get those done too.
I also tried, they had these cheese orbs back at the Ronto Roasters that were like a cheese bread ball kind of thing with a Parmesan garlic sprinkle on top. Teresa thought they were a little dense and they were just fine. I thought they were pretty good. I think they needed more of the Parmesan drizzle stuff on top because it was really, really good. I thought really, really good, but they just needed more of that. And then we find ourselves here in Adventureland at the Tropical Hideaway hanging out.
You know what I just realized? They either canceled fireworks.
They canceled fireworks.
Or it's somehow like soundproof over here.
Yeah, so they didn't have the fireworks tonight because it is 9:48 as we record this. So the fireworks would have been going the last 18 minutes and there was not a peep.
Yeah, unless it's magical over here.
Which I doubt.
It could be.
So that was our experience in the parks the last couple days. We have one more day tomorrow, which we start at Disneyland because we started DCA today. So
yep, go ahead.
We're going to go ahead and do some of that stuff, and we'll see where the Disney winds take us. I'm also happy as a clam because I love Disneyland at night, and it's been dark since 5 o'clock.
It has been. So, we actually entered Disneyland when it was dark.
I know. It was amazing.
So you've only experienced Disneyland at night thus far.
Although I feel like I might lose Teresa early because I know that she's been wanting to go to bed a little bit earlier.
Well, yeah.
And
it's hard to rope drop to park close, so we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Well, reporting live from the Disneyland Resort in Adventureland.
We will be back next... No, we will not. Next week, we actually will
Have
be
off.
Taking off because we take off for the holidays. So we will be back in 2 weeks with more Disneyland news and information. So until then...
Come join us in the parks, apparently.
We're going to go out and enjoy the parks.
Yeah, we'll be back on January 3rd. Will be our next episode. Thank you, Sidell, for masterfully editing this episode and posting the show notes.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.